In 1827, the Osaka magistrate arrested 56-year-old Sano, a woman who had been practicing as an Inari medium. Worshippers of the Shinto fox god Inari could meet with her, and she would go into a trance and talk to Inari. Now, spirit mediums were not illegal in Edo period Japan, and there was a strong tradition of Inari mediumship in particular. That was her legitimate official job. It's not what got Sano into trouble. She, alongside her son Shinsuke, another woman named Ye, and two other people, had set up what is basically a pyramid scheme. Sano would pretend to be a noblewoman from Kyoto with miraculous power to grant prosperity to those who donated to her, and she would give donations from newer investors to older ones to show the miraculous increase in wealth. Initially, Sano claimed that she had only committed the fraud for money, but soon a different side of the case came to light. Investigators, led by Oshio Heihachiro, discovered paper effigies, nails, and ritual candles in Sano's house, which led them to suspect that she had been practicing witchcraft, specifically fox witchery, which involves commanding a fox spirit to do her bidding. That was a common allegation for the time and place, but upon further interrogation, they discovered something more shocking. Sano, it turned out, was not an ordinary charlatan as they first thought. She had learned these mysterious arts from a woman named Kino, who in turn learned it from Toyota Mitsugi. Mitsugi and her followers claimed to be mediums for Inari, but really they were followers of a so-called pernicious sect, a forbidden religion that worshipped Tente Buddha, the Lord of Heaven, a deity with no form. What is this pernicious sect? Well, I'm glad you asked, because as the investigator discovered, Mitsugi and her followers were in fact Christians. Despite being officially shut off from the outside world, Japan at that time was no stranger to Christianity. Christianity was brought to Japan by the Portuguese in the mid-16th century, during a time of civil wars between samurai clans vying for dominance. If you've seen FX's Shogun, that's what that's about. By 1587, there was already an edict banning Christianity, issued by Toyotomi Hideyoshi, the second of the three great unifiers of Japan, warlords who rose to immense power and brought an end to the civil wars. But it wasn't well enforced, and Christianity was still technically tolerated. Hideyoshi's successor and the third great unifier, Tokugawa Ieyasu, however, tightened the screws on Christians. The Tokugawa shogunate, which he established and would continue until 1867, was infamous in cracking down on Christians, brutally torturing converts to make them give up on their faith, and executing those who refused. By the time Sano was arrested in 1827, Christianity was effectively wiped out. You could go through your whole life in Tokugawa Japan without ever meeting a living, breathing Christian. But according to the courts and the magistrates, Christianity was still an existential threat to Japan. Legal records are full of stories of Christians being arrested, Christians giving testimonies of their nefarious ways, local populations being taught how to identify signs of hidden Christian practice in their area. But wait, these people weren't practicing Christianity in a way we would recognize now. Sure, they worship an image that looks like the Virgin Mary and baby Jesus, but they also meditate under a waterfall and draw symbols to paralyze someone. They were basically wizards, mediums, and fortune tellers. So what's going on, and who really were these people? I'm your host, Tor Parsons. I'm in my friend's apartment in Jersey City right now, and the co-hosts are back in my studio in Tennessee, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. Toyota Mitsugi was born in Echu Province, which is present-day Toyama Prefecture, in 1774 to a farming family. 1 year after that, the whole family moved to Kyoto. Mitsugi worked as a maid from a young age and later worked in the sex trade. In her mid-20s, she married a man named Iori. Mitsugi described her new husband as someone who, quote, led a dissipated life. He was also the son of a Shinto priest, and he taught her divination and Inari mediumship, something which she had a knack for. Mitsugi and Iori earned their living as Inari mediums, but Mitsugi started having doubts about her profession. Quote, "Inari mediums, I reckoned, are no more than practitioners of fox witchery. Their profession is just a game, getting people excited by shaking a wand and tricking ignorant men and women," she testified. In the meantime, Iori started having an affair with a woman named Katsura. One day, in the ninth month of 1810, Mitsugi found that Iori had run away, quote, "leaving behind all his household possessions and savings, and also a letter of divorce for her." Mitsugi started asking around and was able to confirm that he had run away with his mistress. She was so upset at what happened and was so overcome with hatred towards Katsura that she wished death upon the woman who had stolen her husband. At that point, her friend Wasa offered her a solution. Wasa was a widow who ran a tea house and, as Mitsugi described her, at heart a solid character. Upon finding out what happened, she told Mitsugi to give up on Iori after all that bastard had been unfaithful to her, and to leave her house, sell her belongings, and move in with her. Mitsugi agreed. After moving in with Wasa, Mitsugi noticed that a man visited her often. This man was Mizuno Gunki. Gunki was quite a mysterious character, despite his importance to the story. No one knew where he was from or how he had come to his practices. What is known is that by 1795, he had been employed as a scribe at two prominent noble houses in Kyoto. At the time Mitsugi met him, he worked for the Kan-in princely house. Beside his day job as a scribe, Gunki secretly transmitted what he called Christian teachings to his followers. Now, Gunki was familiar with at least some form of legitimate Christian doctrine. After all, he had lectured his male followers on the works of Matteo Ricci, a Jesuit priest who founded the Jesuit mission in China. But it seems like he had based his practices not on actual Christianity, but on the depictions of Christians in popular culture of the era. Christians were long portrayed as this dangerous force, hell-bent on subverting the social order and overthrowing the government. Toyotomi Hideyoshi cited Christianity's incompatibility with Japan's own religions, as shown by the Jesuits directing the converts to destroy Shinto shrines and Buddhist temples, as the reason for his anti-Christian edict. By the time Ieyasu rose to power, stories of the church's role in the Spanish and Portuguese conquest of America had also made its way to Japan, and the nature of Christianity itself as a religion that worshipped a man who was executed for breaking the law disturbed Ieyasu Tokugawa. By the time of the Tokugawa shogunate, stories of Christians conspiring to take down Japan had become widespread. The Shimabara Rebellion of 1637 and 38, in which mostly Catholic peasants banded together with some local ronin and led by a Christian teenager, had impacted the way Christians were viewed at the time. As time went on, stories about Christians took on a fantastical bent. If earlier stories portray Christians as conquerors from a foreign land, later stories portray them as basically cartoon villains. Gunki seemed to have gotten most of his ideas, particularly the name Tente Buddha for God and the mantra Zensu Mare Paraizo, Jesus Mary Paradise, from a text that roughly dates back to the early 18th century called A True Account of the Coming of the Kurishitan Sect to this country, which depicted Christians as evil wizards who can fly and cast spells. Gunki told Mitsugi, quote, "There is something out of the ordinary about your facial features. What have you been doing up to now?" And so, Mitsugi told him about all her problems. Gunki told her, quote, "If you hate Katsura so much, why don't you describe her to me in detail? I can then show her to you, and you'll be able to free yourself of your despair and hatred." Mitsugi wasn't sure what Gunki was going to do, but Wasa convinced her that he was no ordinary man, and he had mastered mysterious arts. And so, Mitsugi described Katsura to him. And so one evening, in a detached room in the garden of Wasa's house, Mitsugi, Gunki, and Wasa sat together. First, Gunki extinguished a candle that was 25 or 30 feet away from him. Then he walked out to the veranda. Then suddenly, a figure resembling Katsura walked into the garden, accompanied by a girl who looked like a maid. Mitsugi was livid at the sight of her. She ran to Katsura and tried to grab her, but Wasa stopped her. When Mitsugi had calmed down, Katsura's figure disappeared. Mitsugi was amazed by what she had seen. "How could you do something so amazing?" she said. "That's nothing." "Watch this," Gunki replied. He filled a pot with water and then performed some spells on it and made the water levitate out of the pot. Mitsugi was absolutely gobsmacked. She knew that all these things are supposed to just be party tricks. After all, she had learned the art of mediumship from her ex-husband. But Gunki? Gunki was different. He seemed like the real deal, and Mitsugi wanted him to teach her. Gunki told her that was sorcery, and not something you should trouble yourself with. But if you master the other arts I can transmit to you, you'll be able to foresee things before they occur, and predict fortune and misfortune correctly. When people come to consult you, you'll be able to heal people by performing prayer rituals, and you'll never be short of money. However, I can't transmit these things lightly. You might be able to perform these arts for a while, but unless you commit yourself totally to your training without taking a husband for the rest of your life, you will die before your time. I will teach you, but only if you keep these things well in mind. Mitsugi agreed. After all, she had given up on men after what Iori did to her. The next step was to stand under a waterfall every night for 30 days and to pay Gunki the equivalent of 1,000 mon in silver. Mon were copper pieces. The Tokugawa shogunate effectively had three separate circulating currencies based on gold, silver, and copper. There were official fixed exchange rates between them, but in practice they varied depending on the region. Silver was the most commonly used currency in the Osaka area where this all took place. 1,000 mon in silver is an odd unit of currency, more like saying $1,000 in euros than $1,000 in silver, but that's what the source says, and maybe that was common for the time and place, to denote amounts in copper regardless of what coins you were using. I don't know. Sometime after that, Gunki allowed Mitsugi to touch the scroll that he called the Lord of Heaven, which depicted a woman with loose hair, with a child on her left hand and a sword on her right, probably supposed to be the Virgin Mary and baby Jesus. The process of approaching and reading the scroll involves cutting one's finger and dripping blood onto the figure's breast. Gunki also taught Mitsugi how to close someone's eyes and mouth by drawing a symbol that looks like a counterclockwise spiral. This, he told her, is a way to demonstrate your powers to someone who could potentially be her disciple. Mitsugi described the process as such. When you put the dot in the center, you shout at the same time and clap your hands. The person will be unable to open his eyes and mouth. Gunki handed to Mitsugi a scroll with three figures from Shinto mythology. Because she was now a Christian, supposedly, and Christianity was illegal, these three figures would represent the Trinity without drawing suspicion. He told her to give the name of her god as Hokoku Damyojin, the deified name of Shogun Toyotomi Hideyoshi. With these new mysterious arts taught to her by Gunki, Mitsugi set herself up as a diviner. Outwardly, she presented herself as an I Ching diviner, consulting the mystical Chinese text usually known in the West as the I Ching, and as an Inari medium. She even set up an Inari shrine at her new house, with a piece of wood wrapped in silk as the deity's body. She promoted her god as Hokoku Daimyojin, following Gunki's instruction. The new arts that Gunki had taught Mitsugi seemed to have made her more successful as a medium. Her divination had become more accurate, and her business boomed. What are these mysterious arts, you might ask? Well, here's one thing she did. If someone comes to ask you for prayers to be cured of illness, you should make an effigy out of a clean piece of paper and write the person's house name, name, and age on the front. Fix the effigy to a board, ask the details of the affliction or where the person hurts, and pound large nails into the effigy at the corresponding places. Every night in the hours after midnight, fill a bowl with fresh water and sprinkle it on the effigy with your hand while praying to the Lord of Heaven with all your heart. Do this until the person recovers. If you do this, the person's illness will be cured through the Lord's grace. Naturally, that person will be filled with gratitude and offer you money in return. The same method will work not only for curing illness, but for other things as well. If you want people to offer up money, you should recite the prayers in the same way, but without pounding nails in an effigy, and money and goods will appear quite miraculously. Mitsugi had tried to take some disciples of her own. She was asked by Wasa to teach her adopted daughter in the mysterious arts, but the daughter was obviously not interested in it. She had also taken a male disciple by the name of Kinoshin, but quote, he wasn't strong or bold of character and wasn't the kind of person who could be told about the Lord of Heaven, let alone be trusted with transmission of the creed. But her most successful and important disciple was Kinu. Kinu, who you might remember from the beginning as the woman who initiated Sano into this Christian wizard sect, noticed that Mitsugi's medium business was booming. She was 5 years Mitsugi's senior and had been a follower of her even before she became Gunki's student. Kinu wanted to know Mitsugi's trade secrets. So she asked Mitsugi about this, and Mitsugi told her, quote, "This practice can't be transmitted to someone who's easily startled or has a husband or indulges in lust." If she was truly committed, Mitsugi said, she had to prove it by meditating under that same waterfall at night and then climbing a particular mountain dedicated to Inari. Some elements of this growing, women-led, pseudo-Christian magic cult were clearly still derived from mainstream Shintoism. Kinu was committed, so she did all the things that Mitsugi told her to. After training for 2 years, in 1813, Kinu officially joined the sect. She did so the same way Mitsugi did, by dripping her blood onto the Lord of Heaven scroll. Mitsugi taught her how to make paper effigies and how to perform prayer rituals and divinations. Kinu also picked up a student of her own, Sano. Sano had a rough life. Her father had died the same year she was born, and her mother had abandoned her to remarry, leaving her to be raised by her grandparents. When she was 16, both of her grandparents died. She found work as a servant, and at age 22, she got married, and 10 years later, she had a son, Shinsuke. But 4 years later, her husband died, and left alone with a young child, she needed to make a living. For a while, she got by making playing cards. She had known Kinu for a while by that time. One day, when Sano was complaining to her about how hard life was for her, Kinu told her, "You can't make a living just from making playing cards, you should remarry." But Sano didn't want to remarry, so Kinu told her about these mysterious arts she had learned from Mitsugi. She said, "What ordinary Inari mediums do is in fact little more than a game. One can do it without practicing austerities. The method that Mitsugi transmitted to me, however, is extremely difficult. If you are indeed determined not to take a husband for the rest of your life, or to have anything to do with lust, I will teach you this method. But it'll be impossible to master it unless you first rid yourself of any inclination to be startled by what you see, and you cannot have the slightest fear for your life." Sano was immediately interested. She begged Kinu to teach her this new way. Kinu agreed. She moved in with Sano and kept doing her medium business. Sano, on the other hand, set out to do waterfall meditation and mountain climbing, the same thing that Kinu did when she first joined. But Kinu told Sano that the cult's rules forbade direct contact with the master of one's master, so she was not allowed to directly meet Mitsugi. Sano and Kinu moved out of Kyoto to Osaka to set up their medium business there. Even then, Sano had yet to learn Kinu's secret arts, so she had this setup where she got Kinu to perform the divination for her and had her son relay the results to her. After so long, 3 years after they moved to Osaka, Kinu finally revealed the secret practices to Sano. Sano had officially joined. Sano was devoted to her new god and believed she was a Christian and what she was practicing was Christianity, but she had a rather unique interpretation of it even compared to other Japanese pseudo-Christians. She decided to set out on a trip to Nagasaki, one of the ports where, centuries ago by this point, Portuguese sailors had brought Christianity to the Japanese, because she heard that there's a Christian ritual there where people step on plates with pictures of the Lord of Heaven. She had heard a garbled account of this ritual, to say the least. The plates existed, they were called fumie plates, and they had an image of Jesus on them, the only Christian paraphernalia that was legal to own in Edo, Japan, but it was actually an anti-Christian ritual. Stepping on them was meant to prove that someone was not a Christian, because, as the logic goes, a real Christian would not step on the image of their savior. But Sano really wanted to see her god. She thought that if she did the fumie as an act of faith, the Lord would surely forgive her. We'll put a pin in that. Sano needed someone to look after her son Shinsuke once she was gone, and for that she needed to, if not fully recruit them into her cult, get them on board with some of her beliefs, enough that she could explain why she was going to Nagasaki. Apparently this was an unlikely enough thing to do that she couldn't or didn't want to lie about why she was going there. She set her eyes on Soyo, her neighbor. From Kinu, she learned that Soyo's hairdresser had been making advances at her, but she refused because she was married and she didn't want to be in an adulterous relationship. Sano told Soyo all of this, claiming she'd learned it all in a vision from Inari. She promised to pray to Inari for Soyo, who was understandably a bit confused, but like Pierre Trudeau, Sano basically went, "Just watch me." Sano prayed to the Lord of Heaven, not Inari, and miraculously, the hairdresser ran away. Soyo was overjoyed. Her husband called Sano their benefactor and urged Soyo to shower her with gifts, and she did, giving Sano 30,000 coppers and 15 articles of clothes. So, when Sano asked her to look after Shinsuke while she was gone going to Nagasaki, Soyo agreed. In 1820, Sano made her pilgrimage to Nagasaki, and she did manage to do the Fumie trampling. It didn't seem to even occur to her that this was meant to be an anti-Christian ritual. She saw it as the fulfillment of her faith. She came back even more committed to the Lord of Heaven than ever. She prayed day and night, claiming to have developed clairvoyance. In the ninth month of 1821, Sano and Shinsuke left their current home to live in what she described as a small hut. Now we're finally back to where we started. Sano and her son soon moved to a village close to the city and concocted their pyramid scheme. Sano roped in Ye, who lived nearby. Ye had told Sano that her husband was basically disabled and she hadn't been intimate with him for years. One day, when Ye came to visit, Sano, quote, set out what she had deduced about the course of her life from the time she was small until the present, with all the details about her circumstances and experiences. Sano evidently hit the mark. Cold reading! It's a marvelous thing. The practices of this divination cult seem to have been a combination of faith and flimflam. Clearly, Sano had learned how to make deductions about people's lives that sounded legit, like a hack magician going, I'm getting something about an Uncle John? No, Uncle Jim? Who had a drinking problem he got over? And someone's aunt in the audience is like, I had an Uncle Jake, and he had a friend who used to have a drinking problem. You really are magic. Some of this, as you're about to see, really was just about ripping people off. But I think if you'd asked Sano in complete confidence, with the assurance that she wouldn't lie, whether she was clairvoyant or not, I think she'd say yes. She was clearly earnest in her faith in the Lord of Heaven, her cult's game of telephone pseudo-Jesus. With all the mystical trappings of the practice she'd been inducted into, I think she really believed she and her masters had supernatural abilities. Anyway, the cold reading amazed Ye so much, she begged Sano to be her teacher. Sano told Ye that she wanted to find a way to expand her divination business, which would doubtlessly help a lot of people to know this miraculous way, but she needed money. Ye told her that their landlord, Yohei, surely had the money, but he's stingy and wouldn't give them anything unless he gets something in return. Sano said there had to be a way. She concocted this story of a noblewoman from Kyoto who knew a miraculous way to make people rich, and she had come to Osaka to spread her method. To enact her plan, Sano got Shinsuke, Ye, a masseur that Sano had known for a while named Kanzo, and his wife Toki to help her out. Ye told Yohei the story, and he actually did agree to give money to the noblewoman, much to Ye's surprise. Ye, Kanzo, and Toki further spread the story of this noblewoman around Osaka, and they managed to ensnare 18 people, in addition to Yohei, his wife, and his mother, and gained a total of 59,000 mon in silver, that's that measure of currency again, 28.25 ryo in gold, 720,000 coppers, and 320 articles of clothing, which were pawned for additional money, with their scheme. Converting currencies of that time is difficult, but it was a lot. But as we know, eventually, the scheme fell apart. Yohei had grown suspicious of this noble woman with magical powers and eventually figured out that it was Sano. Sano had fled to Harima, in present-day Hyogo Prefecture, and Yohei chased her down there. On the 22nd day of the first month of 1827, around February 17th by today's calendar, Sano and her accomplices were arrested. Call it a cult, a religion, a secret society, an excuse to do some pyramid schemes, or whatever, Sano was not the mastermind of this peculiar, supposedly Christian outfit. As best as anyone could tell, the founder was that gunky guy. And what had happened to him? Well, he was not doing well, it turned out. In 1817, Gunky had run away from the noble house that employed him because he was involved in, quote, some sort of financial irregularities, but was caught and brought back. He was dismissed and prohibited from taking up another service in another noble house, and his household possessions were confiscated. He spent the last years of his life relying on financial assistance. He had begged for money from Mitsugi on several occasions, and had pawned the Lord of Heaven scroll that Mitsugi and Kinu had dripped their blood on. He died in 1824, 3 years before Sano and Co. were brought to justice. Now, it's time to explain the Tokugawa judicial system. The investigation was overseen by the Osaka Magistracy, which was responsible for the overall governance of Osaka, including judicial matters. These matters were shared by the Eastern and Western Magistracies, named so based on the location of their offices, but not their jurisdiction. They took duties on alternate months, and Sano's case was handled by the Eastern Magistracy, led by a magistrate named Oshio Heihachiro. But to hand out sentences, the Osaka Magistracy had to consult the Osaka governor first. If the governor thought the case needed further considerations, he would forward it to the senior counselors at Edo, aka present-day Tokyo, which then as now is the capital. At the time of the incident, the standard used for law and punishment were the Rules for Deciding Judicial Matters, a set of standardized criteria for punishment compiled in the 1730s, 1740s, and precedents from similar cases that happened in the past. Based on their interrogation of Sano, which, based on the practice of the time, involved torture, Oshio and the other investigators managed to get a hold on Kinu, Mitsugi, and others who were implicated, including the two male disciples of Gunki and Fujita Kenzo, a doctor who was arrested simply for owning books, quote, of the Jesus Creed. What books of the Jesus Creed, you might ask? Well, they're, among other things, a translation of the works of Euclid by Matteo Ricci, academic books on Christianity, and a work by Maeno Ryotaku, a Japanese scholar, about the superiority of Western science over Chinese science. Gunki himself could not be arrested because he was dead, although they did manage to get a hold of people who were associated with him, including his 14-year-old son, Makijiro. Conditions in the prison were horrific. A huge number of people who were detained, including Sano's son and two of her associates, had fallen ill and died during the investigative process. But the magistrate didn't quite know what to do with the rest of these people. There had been no cases in the past that could be used as a precedent, nor did the Rules for Deciding Judicial Matters have anything on Christians, probably because whoever compiled it thought that was a problem Japan had already taken care of. Another problem is that Sano had gone to Nagasaki specifically to step on the Fumie image as an act of devotion. This is huge, because the Fumie was meant as a foolproof way of detecting Christians. If you step on the Fumie, you can't be a Christian. If what Sano claimed was true, then that meant the whole Fumie thing was pointless, and who knows how many uncaught Christians there could be scuttling around Japan. Nevertheless, the Fumie matter was dismissed, on the grounds that there was no way to know if Sano was telling the truth, and the conclusion that she wasn't actually a Christian, or didn't actually go to Nagasaki, was more palatable to the authorities. On the first day of the 12th month, 1829, December 30th by today's calendar, 2 years after the initial arrest, the sentences were handed down. Sano, Kinu, Mitsugi, and three other conspirators were to be paraded through Osaka and crucified. Crucifixion as a punishment had already existed in Japan before Christianity, but had become associated with it in a match-the-punishment-to-the-crime kind of way. Four of them had died, leaving only Mitsugi and Heizo to receive the sentence, but that wasn't a problem at all. They had preserved the bodies in salt, just so they could carry out the punishment. But that's not where the story ends. There was one final twist to this story. Remember Oshio Heihachiro, our lead investigator? In 1830, he retired from his position to study Confucianism. But 7 years later, during a bad famine, he led a rebellion motivated by what he saw as the government's bad handling of the situation. Much of Osaka ended up burned down, and Oshio managed to elude capture for a while. But he eventually was found out and took his own life. His body, like the Christian sorcerers that he had captured 8 years ago, was preserved in salt and crucified. Soon, rumors started to circulate that linked this rebellion to his investigation on the Christians. He must have been cursed by Mitsugi, they said. He must secretly be a Christian himself, they said. One story claimed that Mitsugi cursed Oshio to end up on a cross, just like her. One question remains. How many people charged with practicing Christianity in Edo, Japan, were really Christians? After all, even if some of them were familiar with some Christian texts, their practices were, for lack of better words, unchristian. This crew was like an amalgamation of Shinto and Buddhist practices and all the wild stories circulating around about evil Christian wizards. Some, like the Christian scholar Ebisawa Aramichi, believe that, despite all the bonkers things they did, they were sincere, if misguided, in their beliefs. Others think that they were likely to be part of some other subversive underground practices, or directly link them to the other mediums and diviners in Kyoto and Osaka around that time. Sure, they all confessed to being Christians, but they did so when being interrogated, quote, severely, which implied the use of torture. Sano's interrogation especially was explicitly noted to have been done under torture. What are the chances that these people may have just told the investigators what they wanted to hear? Some had looked at the incident from the point of view of how Christianity was viewed in the Edo period as this existential threat to the societal order. Isaac Meyer, the host of the History of Japan podcast, in which I first heard this story, put it in the context of conspiracy theories in the Edo period. Whenever something sneaky and subversive was afoot, it was blamed on Christians. Also, why was this movement primarily women? I'm sure viewers have read lesbian undertones into the relationships between some of the women in this story. There's no evidence of that, and no evidence against it for that matter, but women also have close, intense friendships, and what with this cult's emphasis on lengthy one-on-one training in the dark arts, that may have been the easiest way for it to be transmitted. And in a tightly organized patriarchal society, women form an alternate cultural network through which strange ideas spread fast. It's said that Christianity in Roman times, at the very beginning of it all, was especially likely to have been taken up by women, although historians still debate how true that was. I would compare this group a bit to the Nation of Islam. They have their own religion, with surface-level trappings of another world religion that the early members barely knew anything substantive about. I'd also compare them to edgy teenagers calling themselves Satanists. There are a variety of genuine belief systems called Satanism, some of which are more explicitly pro-evil than others, and most are primarily about independence from organized religion. But most people who use satanic imagery don't have any real satanic ideology, and do it for one reason only: because it pisses off authority figures. I think the best way to interpret Sano's wild bunch, at least, if not their forebears, is as something similar. First and foremost, they were outlaws. They were really more of a gang of con artists, a criminal sisterhood like a Neapolitan guild of pickpockets. And, as outlaws, they embraced imagery of their opposition to the powers that be. As a teenager chugging a beer prays to Satan, as a Mexican drug lord prays to Jesus Malverde, the grifters of Edo, Japan, prayed to Jesus.